We're talking about boxes, the secret life of Howard Hughes. We're lining up calls, and we are looking to see what your insights are into the story. I've still got questions. How about you? We'll find out more from Mark Music. And that claim that the guy that died in 1976, that was always this sort of historical anomaly of just how Howard Hughes ended up dying as this, bad smelling hermit kind of in the ball on the floor, was not actually Howard Hughes, but rather somebody that Howard Hughes himself had somehow arranged to take over in the role of his life so that he could go find some peace and he could go live away privately. And he did with a woman named Eva McClelland, who told this story to Mark Music. There's more to it. You'll hear it next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So, Mark Music, we're lining up the calls for you right now. Already got a couple people standing by. But earlier you were just before we went to the break, you were telling a story, and I didn't want to break that off. Do you remember exactly where you were? If you don't, I have another question to follow up.
I don't remember where
Okay.
that
So let me ask you, earlier you said that when you talked to Eva McClelland, she referred to they don't want this information to get out, or they, and you, so there was some kind of inference that there was a reason why she was not inclined to have shared this story, but she trusted you as opposed to a more nefarious they. And I said, I want to put a pin in that, so I'm taking the pin out. Who was the they that she was thinking of?
Okay, Eva was very, very paranoid. From the first time I met her, she would never talk about this over the phone. She was just a paranoid lady. And she would refer to they because he would always refer to they. And I thought, at one point, I thought they would be the Mormon aides who were advising him, to do this, that, and the other thing. But then I came to the conclusion that they, I believe, is a CIA. It's an element of the CIA.
And
That
they
Howard was
wouldn't.
involved with for decades.
Why would they care after his death?
What we found out is he still made contact with them after his death.
Okay. And when was she worried when she told you this story?
Yes, she was very paranoid. She would, as I said, she'd not talk about it over the phone, so we would go out driving. And I would record her and try to ask her questions and things and then record them down like that. But she would only talk about it while we're driving in a car. She wouldn't talk about it in her apartment or over the phone.
For fear that they were listening.
Yes.
All right, we'll get, I have other questions, but let's get to some of your questions. If you caught the numbers at the top of the hour, join the conversation. If not, we'll run them at the bottom of the hour too. We're talking with Mark Music about the secret life of Howard Hughes. We'll start west of the Rockies. Robert is in Tucson on Coast to Coast. Robert?
Yes, hello. In my opinion, the real Howard Hughes would have taken some of his millions, certainly not all of it, and put it in bank accounts under whatever name he wanted. He was a very smart businessman. That's the key. This woman who claims to be his wife would have been a millionaire when he died. She would have had access to it eventually. It all comes down
But
to the
why would he
old
want it?
saying.
But
Let me
what if he
finish.
didn't want to do that? I mean, you're presuming that he wanted to do that. What if he didn't want that?
Well, I don't think he would like to live in the woods
Why
in
not?
a trailer. I think as a fallback, like I said, the key is he was a smart businessman. As
Okay,
a
I know, but I
fallback,
get that. But why not? Why do we presume that he would want that? That he would somehow want to be able to keep his fingers in all these pies? Why not just say, you know what? I've lived the millionaire lifestyle. Lived
well, what
in
I'm saying is a backup for money. We all need money to live. And you're saying that in the end it was only a small insurance policy. It doesn't make sense. In the end, you've got to follow that rule, and that's follow the money. That's why I can't believe this story because it
Okay,
doesn't
first of
follow
all,
that principle.
you're misusing the term wrong. I mean, so that's what I mean, that's not what that means when Deep Throat used it in the Watergate investigation, but But okay, so let's get an answer to that, though. I mean, just that Robert says, I don't believe it. Bottom line, he just says, I don't believe it. He would want to live like a millionaire. What's the argument against that?
Oh, okay, Robert, actually, this is a really good question, because, you know, why would the richest man in America give up his wealth? Why would he do that? And the answer is, he didn't. He still had access to money. Eva knew that he had a checking account with Chase Manhattan Bank. It was probably under the name of Vernon Nicely, I imagine, but she don't know that. But he had access to money, and he could buy whatever he wanted to buy when he wanted to buy it.
There you go. But he did. There was something about this lifestyle, this more aesthetic lifestyle, that also appealed to him, or he wouldn't have chosen this, right?
They lived in the nature. Eva liked nature, and he liked nature also. But he just also liked living in some place that he didn't have to deal with people. He could be reclusive. He didn't have to worry about someone interacting with him unless he initiated it. There's some neighbors around there that they got to know very, very well, and he would visit with those neighbors, but not just any person that would come up. There'd be people that come up to the ranch, and he would go hide because he didn't want to interact with them.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I'm sensitive to the idea that just because we think we know somebody, we actually know what's in their heart. And I know there are lots of people who are broke who wish they were millionaires, and people who have millions of dollars who would chuck it all tomorrow for some peace. So I guess that part doesn't surprise me as much as it surprised Robert. Let me go to Andy in Norwalk on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Andy?
Yes, great show, Ian and General. I was a great fan of the Hughes story from the time I was a teenager many years ago. And now as an adult senior, I look at what you have just said, and I would say this is a great, great story, a great storyline. And it's very, very intriguing and complex. But would it hold water in a court of law? There's no forensic evidence that could document for an absolute fact beyond a shadow of a doubt that this man was Howard Hughes, and he may have been. And then again, he may have been a CIA plant to throw people off even more, a secondary plant. And also Robert Mayhew, his top assistant. This guy knew more than anyone else, supposedly. And all those secrets, did he ever reveal to any of his relatives the rest of the story of what really happened? And as far as the first caller goes, in my opinion, the $10,000 left to a woman that he supposedly loved, that doesn't add up at all, sir. And I think you might have to question that. And thank you so much.
Andy, I think you're right on track there, because this story, I worked DNA to try to find the DNA, and I couldn't get it. The DNA is the only proof. That is the only absolute proof of this story, and we couldn't get that. We couldn't get that. So it's all these other things put together that add up into this. Robert Mayhew and Howard fell out of favor, I think it was 1970, is about when they separated and fell out of favor there. Robert Mayhew never, the books say, whether this is true or not, I don't know, but the books say that Robert Mayhew never ever met Howard face to face. They never met face to face. They always talked on the phone and so forth. So there's all kind of strangeness associated with that. And what Robert Mayhew knew, I don't know if Robert Mayhew was one of the inside people of what Howard did after 1970. I suspect that he wasn't. There's other people that were. Bill Gay was there. Jack Reel was there. And people knew what was going on, but I don't know that Robert Mayhew was one of them because of this fallout between Mayhew and Hughes.
Was Eva unhappy with when her husband died? She didn't suddenly get a windfall of $1 million from some account somewhere?
No. Eva had some money saved up. What they were living on in the ranch, Eva had a Social Security check, which probably wasn't much. and she had a retirement for civil service, which probably wasn't much. Nick was actually getting a disability check from the Air Force that Werner nicely earned that was coming to them. And so they had some money coming in, and then Nick had all the money he wanted to. He just had to write a check for it. And so they had the money, but if you're living in the middle of the woods in a travel trailer, you don't need a lot of money.
All right, let's go to Brian in Colorado on Coast to Coast AM for Mark Music. Brian?
Hi, Ian. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'd like some of your perspective, too. Mark, I grew up in southwest Iowa. I was born in Omaha and I live in Colorado now. A couple of years ago, I saw a newspaper. It's an alternative. I think it's a weekly. It's out of central or western Nebraska. It's a neat little paper. It's not just a small town paper. It's got an interesting scope. I can't think of the name of it. But a couple of years ago, there was a very similar article about some lady, and I don't remember if her name was Eva. I'm 77. The memory's not what it was. But anyway, very similar. And I was wondering, and she said that she had been married to Howard Hughes, and after everybody thought he was dead and this whole thing, very similar. Had you ever come across anything like that at all, Mark?
Oh, I think I put that article in that paper. So, yeah, I did come across it.
But there was another woman, right? There was another woman. Mark, there was another woman, though, right, that claimed to be married from like 1949 or something like that to Howard Hughes.
A movie star, Carrie Moore, claimed that she married Howard out on a boat.
Oh, that's
and
right.
Then the documents were all ripped up and thrown away. So there's an episode with Carrie Moore, the movie star, who claimed she was married to Howard, but there was no documentation that existed from that.
But she got something, if I remember correctly. Didn't she get something from the estate? Maybe it was just go away money, but I thought she got something.
I don't remember anything there.
Okay. Wildcard line, Richard is in Oklahoma City, OKC. Richard, don't hold it against me for how the Wildcats did today.
I'm doing fine. Thank you for taking my call. I just got a couple of stories with concerning tonight's topic. One was the lady I worked with in an electronics company here in Oklahoma City. We were talking about places we had worked at previously, and she had mentioned that she had worked with one of the Hughes companies in California. And I'd asked her at one point, I said, well, have you heard any of the weird stories about Howard? And she said, well, yes, as a matter of fact, she said she was working with his partner, Frank, at one point, and had mentioned that Frank had received a phone call from the guard at the main gate, saying that there was a bum at the front gate wanting access to the building, and said he was Howard Hughes. And she overheard the conversation on Frank's end saying, no, don't call the police. Yes, it's him. I'll come and get him. And The second one was with the Glomar Explorer was the name of the ship that that Howard Hughes had worked with the U.S. government to get the sunken Russian submarine. And I worked at a place in Benicia, California, off the San Francisco Bay. And the Glomar Explorer back in 94 was parked right out in the middle of that bay, about a mile away from where I worked at.
Richard, this is interesting. The date, do you have a year that about this man wanting to get access into a Hughes company and he claimed to be Howard Hughes?
I'm not really sure. I believe it was sometime during the 60s.
Okay. 60s, okay. That could very well be true. You know, that could very well be true. It sounds like what I've heard other stories about him. It matches what I've heard about other stories about him.
Which him?
Howard.
Okay, the real Howard. 60s. Okay.
The real Howard in the 60s, yes.
Okay. But that something that Richard brought up jogs my memory on something I wanted to ask you earlier. You know, here, Howard Stern has been doing it all night long. Howard Hughes is a guy who is a well-known inventor. His mind works like that. That's one of the reasons why the CIA came to him and said, can you help us with this sub, get the sub off the ocean floor? And But I know this about people, and I think this is true about everybody in one form or another. You know, the dancers have to dance. Singers have to sing. Writers have to write. And inventors have to invent. So it's just part of your DNA. It's what makes you who you are, that thing which you love doing more than anything. So did he continue, did the Howard Hughes that you are purporting to have lived out his life in Alabama, did he continue to invent things? Did he continue to tinker? Did he come up with things which he attempted to patent? Because that would seem to follow a significant pattern in the life of Howard Hughes.
After Eva met him, she said he always liked fixing things. Now, I don't know of any inventions that he had. I do know he built the Spruce Goose. He designed and built the Spruce Goose. He designed and built aircraft during World War II, and the aircraft satellites and things like that. So the guy, throughout his life, was involved with a lot of technology, at the leading edge of technology. But after say, the stand-in died and things like that, she said he always enjoyed working on cars. He would buy parts. He'd buy tools and things like that. But she never mentioned about actually inventing something other than trying to fix things.
Yeah, I get that. And I think that's the big difference, is being an innovator or being an inventor. Today I was at an auto parts store, and today I bought a new saw table for cutting wood on my property. To me, that's not the same. You know, I mean, a lot of guys like to do that, I guess. You know, there's a lot of us out there that do that sort of thing. So that's what I was looking to see, whether the pattern continued there. All right. Danny is also in OKC on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Danny.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. Mark and Ian, it's a fascinating subject. You know, I think it's certainly not inconceivable. You know, this is possible. You know, much like, you know, a lot of people, you know, when Elvis Presley passed away, you know, even Geraldo, you know, did a show on it back when, you know, and I've often speculated. I even thought about Howard Hughes, you know, back then, that, you know, maybe that's, you know, they certainly had the money, and if they had, you know, the right influence and connection, that's something that could have been pulled off. But, you know, it's a small world, because like I was telling your call screener, our family, I was just a boy at the time, but my dad, we were at Howard Air Base in Panama from about 1968 to 1972. And I thought, wow, what a coincidence. But, the thing that strikes me is that, it might have been more than just the privacy. I think a lot of this, I certainly don't have, you know, that kind of money, but I can see how this would be conceivable, whether it's Elvis or someone else like Howard Hughes.
Or Jim Morrison. It's a sort of a mental break that might have happened somewhere along the way. Well, that'll take me to the bottom of the hour, so it'll have to stay there. But we'll give you all the numbers you need to restart the conversation next with Mark Music about Howard Hughes on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. We're heading into this last half hour. We'll get the lines open for you. We'll find a way to get you on the air coming up in just a minute. And please jump in. Some interesting observations about Howard Hughes. Some people find it really difficult to accept that Howard Hughes could have spent his life as a, you know, one of the biggest, the most wealthy man in America, given it all up and lived happily ever after out of the spotlight in the woods in Alabama. They just say, just doesn't add up for me. But at the same time, does it add up for you that very same man became this embarrassment, this stinky flesh that had to be, you know, diapered basically, and not in a way which we would associate with, you know, somebody who's just getting older? Here's somebody who just stopped caring for themselves for years, taking massive amounts of drugs, letting his teeth rot, dying essentially of neglect. Does that make any more sense? I don't think so. So that's part of what I'm arguing, is that there are elements to the story that Mark Music is telling which makes more sense. It's more consistent with the guy who would have a will. It's more consistent with the guy that would be going out dirt biking in the desert when he runs into Melvin Dumars. That's the guy. He was still living life when he ended up with a new wife and a new direction away from all the spotlight. But at the same time, apparently running a little bit of a secret game on the side as he continued to stay in touch with the CIA and very likely some aspects of his business. We'll leave it there, but take more of your calls on the subject coming up next. All right, well, as many calls as we can get between now and the top of the hour on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. If you missed last night's show with ML Behrman about his Bigfoot discovery in the Mojave and the photos that we put up there, if you get Coast Insider, you can go back and listen to it. It was really entertaining. And the calls were great, too, as well, afterward for Open Lines. You all are doing wonderful, helping to put this together. Mark Music boxes The Secret Life of Howard Hughes east of the Rockies. Joe is in Long Island. Joe?
Yeah, Ian, I thought you made a great point there. Someone had such willpower to try and set flight records. Why would he give up on that willpower?
Yeah.
You know, that's weird. But I wanted to ask Mark, just going back to earlier in his life, when he was initially very wealthy, and was that in the press to where people knew it? And in a sense, sometimes people don't want that information that public because it could make you in any number of ways a target.
Oh, yeah, kidnapping and all sorts of stuff.
Right, right. And then if you fast forward to the 60s, you got people in the public eye like the Kennedys, Martin Luther King, what happened to them, and he might have taken notice of that. And then being in the military business in terms of military hardware, that's a little dicey for maybe being targeted in some way. And maybe he figured, hey, I'm going to have to cut bait now, and if I do this, I'll live longer, actually. I might extend my life another 10 to 15 years.
If we accept the argument, he did. I mean, right, yeah. If we accept that he lived to 2001, that's exactly what he did. All right, the great point. Joe, go ahead. Mark, where are you with that?
Being in the public eye when he was younger, that's a really good question because he was involved with all kind of movies. He had this money that his dad died when he was 20, and he had this massive wealth that went to him. And in the 20s and 30s, he made a whole bunch of movies.
Right, The Outlaw.
Which were very, very public and visible. Some of them were very, very successful. Others weren't so much. But then in the 30s, he started his aviation thing, and he set many aviation records. Flight across the United States, speed record across the United States, flying around the world. He set a lot of those aviation records, which provided, again, huge visibility on him, but his personality didn't really want that huge visibility.
Yeah. Came with a cost.
That's probably he became reclusive, more and more reclusive into the 50s of just basically trying to disappear.
John, first time caller line, he's in AZ on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Right, thank you.
You're talking with Mark Music. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mark Music. I talked to you before on your phone, called you at home. But anyway, I am Mr. Nicely's. He went by the name of Vernon Nicely also. He was my neighbor in Camp Verde, lived on Riverview Drive, about 8 miles out of Camp Verde on a road called Salt Mine Road. He came to me one day and he asked me to if I could repair a rear end for a truck. And he was very different than most people, but I could tell he was very educated and he was some type of a machinist. So anyway, he asked me to repair that rear end for him, and I would have thrown it in the trash. But I took a Dremel and cleaned up the gears and cleaned it up for him and gave it to him. And he says, how much do I owe you? I says, you don't owe me anything, partner. I said, just take it. I'm glad to help you out. Well, anyway, he told me a lot of things. He turned out to be my mother's cousin. I didn't know that until after he had moved. He bought my truck. He wanted the Cowboys told him Johnny's got a a very powerful truck with a Cobra jet engine. And then as time went by and years went by, I figured out, well, this man must have understood a new power. I had no idea who he really was, but I felt very good and comfortable about him. And he said his mother's parents in Colorado had 600 broodmares. And he'd also told me that he lived in Jordan with King Hussein. He was quite a guy. And he lived actually at one time, he lived another 10 miles down the road from me out on a ranch called Brown Springs. So anyway, there's more to the story.
And you're convinced that's Howard Hughes?
Oh, yeah, it was him. You betcha. He wore his glove. He had something wrong with his left hand. I noticed that. Yeah. And he looked like my cousin. He looked like my mother's other cousin. See, Howard Hughes is probably part Indian, a hillbilly out of West Virginia, Pennsylvania. There's where the Hughes family came from, because my grandfather was Sylvester Hughes. And they had money. They moved west and moved south down into Texas. And, of course, his uncle bought a print. Somebody drew a picture on a drill bit, and his father bought it. Well, they ended up buying it for $50. And I know quite a bit, and the whole thing is coming together because, that was him.
Okay.
They were ripping him off. The powers that be, he had 12 bankers, and in fact, one of the bankers showed up at my place and told me he was Howard Hughes' banker. I know quite a bit of stuff, and I'll get with General Music and fill him in on a bunch of this stuff.
Okay, I love that idea. Thank you, John. Appreciate that. We also have John in Tucson, west of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast AM for Mark Music.
Yeah. Good evening, Ian and Mark. I've always been fascinating with Howard Hughes, and this is an interesting story where maybe he, just wanted to give up that life and become, But I just had a question about the photos on the website here. The one in 1981, he has a much larger, wider jaw. And if you look on that compared to his photo, his official photo, his eyes are very wide set in his official photo. But in this one in 81, his eyes are very narrow set. And then if you look at the one in 91, his nose looks a lot different than that one in his official photo. And then the final convincing thing is that he's not wearing gloves in the 91 photo, and his hands look very normal. So this story may be true, but these photos, I don't think, give justice to it.
Mark?
Let me talk about his hands in a 91 photo are actually damaged. If you look at those hands, they might not come across well enough on the web. But his hands are damaged very, very much. And the people who met him said his hands were damaged. The jaw on the one, I think it might be because his mouth is open a little bit on that one. But I've had a photo interpreter from the Army look at the Howard Hughes picture from the early 50s and the one from 1991, and he said those are the same men. So an Army photo interpreter said from those two pictures, he said, you got the same guy there, no doubt in his mind. But the hands are damaged in the 1991. They're discolored. And take another look at that if you get a chance, because they are definitely not normal.
Well, and maybe that's the thing. You have to download it as opposed to looking at it on our screen, download the photos somehow, and then using either the Adobe suite or even just basic sort of iPhoto on your Mac or whatever, you could investigate that a little bit further. But that, I think that's a good challenge from John. I thought this was also good. Bo sent me the copy of the article from the newspaper, which confirms something I didn't know. I guess if I ever read it in a biography, it was so long ago, I've since disposed of it. But that when Hughes was buried, the FBI confirmed his identity. Now, again, that comes back to something you said earlier, which I meant to explore a little bit more, but that still seems weird that the FBI would do that.
Yeah, that's just an outright a falsehood. It's an outright lie.
Huh. But I mean, so, okay, I'll take Bo's question here from a different standpoint. This is something slightly different, but he asked at Deacon Punnett, which is my Twitter handle. He said, why did Howard Hughes let himself go? He said, well, it's thoroughly documented and explained. His severe injuries from plane crash was a catalyst to his drug addiction. Nobody tell him no. His health spiraled, died of renal failure from aspirin. Why does that not make sense for you?
That's the story that they wanted the public to believe, but it wasn't the truth.
That he was addicted to drugs after the plane crash.
Oh, yeah.
It was a long time, I got to say. I mean, the plane crash happened, what, 1947? When they were doing the experimental aircraft, it was 47, something like that?
46 was the plane crash.
So 46.
From what I understand, he was on some drugs for pain on that, but that didn't go into his later years.
Well, I mean, come on. But I'll accept Bo's point on that. But still, if we're talking about a drug addiction 20 years later, that starts to make me wonder a little bit about whether that could be valid. I mean, it may have been true that he was drug addicted for a long time, but that's like for the rest of his life to be addicted to painkillers, be able to get whatever he wanted, and so he dies like that. But again, so hang on to that thought. Assuming you're right, who else other than his LDS bodyguards, who else would have had to have been in on this all the way up to when he died?
Okay, there's a gentleman named Jack Reel. Jack Reel was an executive for Lockheed Aircraft, and Jack Reel used to get airplanes for him. Jack Reel knew what the real story was. In fact, he put out a book in 2003. Now, this is 2 years after Nick would have died, 2003, and it was just a pull-off book. It was just a pull-off book for what the truth was there. So Jack Reel, we believe, knew it. There's a guy named John Meyer, who we believe knew it. John Meyer worked for Howard Hughes, and he bought the mines. Howard owned a bunch of mines in Nevada, and John Meyer was the person that purchased those. John Meyer would show up at the ranch when they lived at the ranch in the 80s. So Howard had visits from people who worked for him when they were living in this wooded area in Alabama. So there's people who were aware of the situation that was very not obvious, and they just kept the secrets.
And that's interesting, too, because, I mean, I think there are a lot of people who would say, well, they had sometimes, and who knows whether he was paying anybody to keep the secrets, too. I'm not saying that he was, but he certainly could have if he had wanted to at that point, slip somebody a few bucks, especially if Eve McClellan says that she has no idea what he was doing with his money. She just knows that money would turn up whenever he needed it. So, all right. I mean, I don't know that any of us could ever be fully convinced unless we were you, and it took you 4 years to get there. But I love all the things you've brought up. Let me get to, see if we can't whip through these last three calls real quick. First time caller line, Lucy is in Columbus, Ohio, on Coast to Coast. Lucy?
Yes. I was listening. I've never met or followed Mr. Hughes' life, but what you were questioning about this change of behavior with his health and hygiene, seems to me that mental illness could be playing that. It doesn't matter how rich or famous someone is, they can suffer from mental illness, and that certainly sounds like what took place there, even though he could function in other areas.
Well, you very well could be right, but Mark, I mean, you would think the two at the same time, if we're going to speculate on mental illness, we'd have to speculate on why wouldn't it be in everybody's best interest to get him some help?
As I talked to a health professional on this, I made a comment in one of my presentations, and they said, it sounds like he was OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And that's what they diagnosed it based on what I was talking about. So I think the real Howard did have some mental health issues that he dealt with throughout his lifetime. So I think the mental health thing was a factor, And maybe that was part of the reason why he wanted to become so reclusive also. That might have been a factor with that. But he did have some behavioral health issues.
East of the Rockies, Sam is in Arkansas on Coast to Coast. Sam?
Hello. My name is Sam Pardue. And my father, his name's Sam Pardue, he knew Melvin Dumar when he lived out in Fallon, Nevada. He dealt with cattle and pigs. And he helped Melvin do some injections. We've got a box here with Melvin Dumar's handwriting on it, or a receipt.
That's worth something.
So injections
of what?
It's faded. Well, it would be like penicillin
for cattle.
For cattle and pigs. Yeah, we've got at least one of the injectors, you know, the hypodermic needles in a glass bottle, you know.
Yeah.
He did relate to my father the story of how he picked him up out in the desert.
Huh.
So that's my two cents.
I appreciate that. So Melvin Dumars actually then did tell your dad about it too. So.
Yeah.
At least he was being consistent. Well, thank you. And thank you to Mark Music. I enjoyed it so much. Appreciate you jumping in. And I look forward to hearing an update from you soon. Let's go ahead and mark it in your calendar that you're going to get back to us when you find out whether anybody else has discovered those little telling shoeboxes of history that are waiting for them in their house. And we'll add that to Boxes, The Secret Life of Howard Hughes. Have a great night. Everybody else have a very good weekend. Until we talk again coming up in October, please stay safe. Play it on the inside. Let's all make sure that we get through this crisis, whatever it is, healthier and come out on the other end and get this economy jump-started the way it needs to. And in the meantime, Deus te amat, and I do too.